The G20 foreign ministers meeting was held in Rio, Brazil last week, where the host country pushed for a UN overhaul, blaming the body for failing to stop wars and conflicts that came at the steep cost of innocent civilian lives. In an increasingly polarized world with the rise of the so-called new Cold War, what important purpose does the foreign ministers meeting serve? For deeper insights, we now connect with Professor Kim Byung-ju at the Hankuk University of Foreign Studies. Good morning, Professor Kim.
Good morning.
Hope you had a decent weekend.
I did. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Perhaps we can take this time to start out with the basics for our listeners' easier understanding. We decided maybe to touch upon the G20 system first. Now, we're quite familiar with the G20 summits, one of which Korea hosted back in 2010. Now, how is a G20 foreign ministers meeting related to the G20 summit at large? And what are the other G20 ministerial meetings?
Right. Yes, it's confusing and sounds complicated because G20 summit is something that we've been hearing the whole time, but sometimes we hear about ministerial meetings. So how does this work? Okay, how do I make this simple? Well, that's my job anyway, isn't it? Right. I think what we have to remember is that G20 summit, let's start with G20 summit. Summit itself, the gathering of the head of nations, that I guess the summit part started back in 2008 in response to the global economic or financial crisis at that time. Barack Obama just took over from George W. Bush, White House, and already the world was in deep crisis in terms of financial turmoil, and President Obama decided he's going to summon the head of states of 20 largest economies around the world. G7, he felt, was already too limited. G7 countries, most European plus Japan, too limited. The cooperation, scope of cooperation had to be expanded, he felt. The world has changed. I mean, G7 was created back in, what, 70s? And so so much time has passed, and the overall landscape of world economic system has changed, and there are so many important players, including Korea, of course, among the G20. And so Obama decided to, put together a meeting for, these head of states of 20's largest economy in order to deal with that economic crisis. That's how we remember it. And that was 2008. And they, at the beginning, they had like these summits like twice a year because the economic situation around the world was very, very serious. And so United States, 2008, November, and then 2009, April, London, UK hosted, and then September, only about, 5 months later, Pittsburgh, United States held the summit again, and then Canada followed. And then Korea came as actually third country that held the fifth summit, the G20 summit in Seoul. That was, as you mentioned, 2010, November. So that's how we remember it. And then that's fair way of remembering it. Now, the reason why G20 system ministerial meetings sound confusing is G20 summit started 2008, as I mentioned. That's something important to remember. But if you want to get more details about G20, one could argue that actually G20 system itself started back in 1999. As a cooperation mechanism for finance ministers. So there was a group gathering called G20 Finance Ministers Meeting that was first held in Germany in 1999. And then 2000, 2001, it was kind of annual thing. And what President Obama did was actually got on a ride, on a vehicle that was already moving. There was a financial ministers gathering of G20 starting from 1999, but President Obama said, okay, let's make this one at a summit, not just the financial ministers meeting, and then let's make it a summit. So depending on how you ask the question, if you ask a question, when did G20 actually start? The right answer would be 1999 finance ministers meeting. Okay. When did G20 summit start? Then the right answer would be, 2008 under Barack Obama's initiative, head of the states began getting. So it's kind of like a dual track or triple track or quadruple track, because it's not only finance ministers meeting, and we are talking about foreign ministers meeting here too, right? And foreign ministers meeting began 2017. There's also labor and employment ministers meeting that began 2010, continuing. I think we will see these different ministerial meetings taking being hosted by Brazil this time, because India last year held so many different ministerial meetings, as I mentioned. Finance minister meeting, foreign minister meeting, labor and employment ministers meeting. Well, of course, we cannot forget trade ministers meeting. That's also probably most likely to take place. And then, to make this picture even more complicated, going beyond G20, they add B20s. You can guess what B20 is, right? Like business leaders gathering. Right. So they have not only G but B20, and then they have like what do you call it? C20, civil society delegations. That also, last year India also included that, and then different kinds. There are like L20, P20, S20. Well, we're not going to get into all this, but
Thank you.
so the important. Well, we have limited time, right? So anyway. This G20 signifies kind of very diverse and multidimensional, supposedly, hopefully. I mean, it's a wishful thinking. Whether they make real difference or not, I think we will need more time going forward. But G20 itself is a platform where the countries around the world are adding new things in terms of cooperation, going beyond the heads of states meetings, but ministers of finance, foreign affairs, labor, and then going beyond government, like business leaders, civil society leaders, science leaders, even think tank. They call it T20, think different think tanks getting together. So it's kind of expanding vehicle of global cooperation. But there's always question of its effectiveness. So they get together. So what difference do they make? There are all these those questions. So it is expanding. In terms of its significance, we need more time to make our judgment.
And in fact, that point gets debated to death. Lots of critics, lots of experts and people in academia trying to understand its goal, not just the G20 summit, but as you've expanded on the foreign ministers meeting that just took place last week and the upcoming finance ministers meeting coming up this week. In fact, as I briefly mentioned in the opening, Brazil last week, the host country, even mentioned something of a UN overhaul. Saying, is it ineffective? Can we do better, essentially? Professor Kim, we've talked about the rise of the new Cold War several times with you. This is where China and Russia increasingly stand on the opposing end to the West. But ever since the G20 summit was first realized in 2008, they have been core members. Now, in Brazil, at the foreign ministers meeting this time, the Russian foreign minister was present, but the Chinese counterpart was not. What do we make of this? What does this mean?
Yeah, that's a really important question this time, and it's some kind of military question, depending on whom you ask. Journalists and academics really wonder about what does this really mean. My take on that is Lavrov's participation in G20, like he did last time in India last year, G20, means Russia's intention to treat Ukraine as kind of like their kind of domestic affairs. The eastern side of Ukraine is, this is Russia's kind of a position, I guess. Eastern side of Ukraine, where Russians live, considerable size of Russians and pro-Russians live in Ukraine, that part is their territory. It's Russian territory, and therefore fight over this territory is their domestic affairs, and therefore, there's no global issue to be discussed here, and Russia continues to participate in this vehicle of cooperation. No matter what other countries say about Ukraine's situation, they want to kind of set that aside, ignore it, downplay it, minimize it, and Russia wants to continue to join this kind of forum and vehicle of cooperation as a major power, rather than shunning it, rather than running away from it because of Ukraine. I think that kind of makes sense, from Moscow perspective. China Wang's absence is that raises a bigger question. What does it mean I don't think anyone has really offered a straightforward, clear explanation. But if we rely on Chinese foreign affairs statement, they're not offering an explanation of his absence, but rather a criticism of G20 coming up when it was being planned and everything. And Brazil was, as a hosting country, Brazil was talking about it, key topics. Chinese Foreign Ministry issued a quite a strong statement against dealing with the Ukraine issue, and China said, "Look, G20 is economic body, economic vehicle, cooperation, economic vehicle, not, I mean, vehicle for economic cooperation, and we don't want make G20 as a venue of political discussion. We reject the idea of G20 as a place where we talk about, sensitive political issues." And so that's clearly about Ukraine and clearly about China's hesitance to put Moscow in difficult position when Beijing and Moscow are closely working together as one. So that could be one of the explanations. And then also maybe China's opposition to G20 system as a whole as something that was set up by the United States. Maybe they want to create something new, something different. Wang Yi himself was going through France and Germany and different European countries while this G20 foreign ministers meeting was taking place. So that, another problem. They want to try something else other than this game that United States had set up. So, but I was asking different views of experts and trying to find out different views on this. But I think it's kind of puzzling. I don't think no one anyone has really offered clear-cut answer onto this. And I think there will be more analysis coming up after. So I'll get back to you on this with a more persuasive explanation.
Okay, for us again, we'll wait for your cue in that regard. Now, there are two major wars that perhaps had to be covered in Brazil. Now, regarding the issues, particularly of the Russian invasion of Ukraine that just saw its 2-year anniversary and the Israel-Palestine conflict. Now, if we were to just set aside the views of Russia and China for a second, what did the rest of the G20 foreign ministers agree on or disagree on?
First, Ukraine, G20 foreign ministers on Ukraine. I think it's important to recognize what happened last year in India. India hosted G20 and G20 foreign ministers meeting. We understand India's stance on Ukraine issue. India wants to remain Russia's friend. And therefore, what happened last year in India was that a very diluted statement. And India, as a host country last year, played a key role to produce the statement that G20 foreign ministers and G20 member countries, head of states, oppose, quote unquote, the violent resolution of situations, violent conflicts, and wars. And then there was no mentioning of Ukraine there. Like we're against the wars, and that's all they decided. And I guess Russia, I mean, this goes back to the question of how come Lavrov was there. And then I guess Russia feels that G20, like considering last year's experience, G20 is working out pretty all right for Russia's interests. So that's probably why he's this year, he was there again this year. And then it worked out kind of like, with that legacy of last year's case. Again, Russia opposed. And then what we saw was this division. You mentioned the rise of new Cold War, where West on one side, Korea, Japan, including on the West side, and then China, Russia on the other side. But again, there's an additional dimension this time in Brazil. What we saw, Brazil is kind of like a big figure in terms of like a global South, and the global South was very visible this time. So division among three different groups: China, Russia on one side, and then West on the other side, and then global South. And these three different groups could not get agree on Ukraine side. So there this time again, their position on Ukraine issue did not show much progress from last year, what we saw in India. So big disappointment for those of us who advocate clear, quick resolution, peaceful resolution. And then, okay, you mentioned, I'm sorry,
The Gaza
I got to
Strip,
manage
yes.
time better, right? I got to manage time better here. But Israel, I'm watching time here. Israel and Palestine conflict. Interesting thing is, very different picture as compared to Ukraine issue. Almost, I think the host country, Brazil, used the word expression, virtually unanimous agreement that in Israel-Palestine case, the two-state solution should be pursued. So almost, Brazil said, virtually everybody agreed that the two-state solution had to be pursued. Russia, China, European countries, they all agreed that two-state solution here means state of Israel, state of Palestine, they need to be set up firmly and then coexist together peacefully. Why did they say virtually? Of course, the guess is it's United States. United States didn't join. And of course, this is because the pro-Israel sentiment inside the United States that stopped Biden government and Tony Blinken, Secretary of State, participating firmly on this stance here. So virtually unanimous states, except the United States.
Professor Kim, due to our time constraint, we're quickly
I know.
running out. Maybe this
I
could
know.
be our last question today.
Okay.
Minister Shoter met with his counterparts from the U.S. and Japan. What do we need to know as a key point of discussion at this trilateral meeting? Of course, keeping North Korea in check must have been a priority.
Yeah, of course, North Korea was on the top of the list when this gathering of three, foreign ministers, Sotael from Korea, Tony Blinken from the United States, and Kamikawa Yoko from Japan here. And this trilateral meeting, it's very interesting to be reminded. As many as seven such meetings now, including this one, have taken place among the three countries, trilateral meeting of foreign ministers since the beginning of Yoon Suk Yeol government. So that means there is a lot going on, seven times of gathering this kind. And the last time the three ministers from three countries get together was only about three months ago in San Francisco at the time of APEC. And of course, for Jotael, Korea's foreign minister, it was first time. But this is very active mechanism of cooperation. We need to be reminded. And overall, they're emphasizing that this trilateral cooperation system has to be further institutionalized, further strengthened. Of course, behind that, what everyone has in mind is the Trump, the T2, Trump coming back, right? So they're talking about that. And then the real-time monitoring of missiles of North Korea, that system, they recognize the system has been built up quite quickly, the cooperation between the three countries for the last several months or a year or so. So they have gone a lot on that side, but they're going to continue to work hard on North Korean missiles coming in. And then North Korea's cyber activities about making money to finance these illegal weapons. And then North Korea, Russia working together for military weapons, all those things they discussed again. So nothing really major, nothing really new coming out of this here, but it just shows the fast pace where this system of trilateral cooperation is picking up speed and maintaining speed, especially with the T2 in mind in everybody's overall. So it was a kind of comforting picture, if you will, those of us who want to see closer cooperation and greater security in this part of the world.
Professor Kim, do we really call it T2, or is that jargon
It's
very
mine.
specific?
Sorry. I should add intellectual property mark behind,
You
the
should.
trademark. Yeah, trademark.
It's
The movie I
incredibly
was watching.
clever.
Yeah, I was watching too many movies during the 1980s. Terminator 1, Terminator 2. I'm not saying the Trump is Terminator, but anyway, all of this mixed mind. But I'm glad you asked.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kim. We appreciate your insights. We'll speak to you again next week.
Thank you very much.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.